Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Two Bros, One Flick. Andy and Sam here as always.
Hey.
Along with Mr. A.
Hey guys.
How you doing, man?
Man, I'm just living the dream.
Oh, hell yeah.
Mr. A won an awesome, law
competition. Yeah, contest.
Last weekend.
Many props to you, good sir.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's pretty badass.
Yeah. Pretty cool. Very nice, very nice.
Pretty cool. Actually, this weekend, another set of Tech Law people won their competition. I think theirs was the Admin Law one.
That's right.
Yeah, good for them.
So congratulations. I know Brittany Irvin's on the team and then some other people. So great job, you guys.
Yeah.
Mesmerized by what is that, Andy?
Just Blue Moon.
Oh, is it Blue Moon? Okay.
So we are going to talk today about the 2013 Ridley Scott film, The Counselor. And it is written by Cormac McCarthy.
But I think it's not a book.
It's a screenplay, and he's been toying around with the screenplay for like decades, not just years. Like, he's had this in his back pocket since
before his books got cool.
Yeah. Like, a really long time. And, I'm sure it's been in, like, through many renditions and different things, but it's been something he's been tossing around for a while. Finally got the big screen treatment. It was, we were all really excited about it. And then the reviews started coming out.
We were all really excited about it, like the first trailer. Because I remember
first trailer was really
my friend was like a teaser trailer, and it just looked really cool. And Javier Bardem had frosted tips in that trailer, but in the movie he doesn't.
Spoiler alert.
But he's got crazy hair.
He still has crazy hair. Yeah, he has his crazy hair, but not the frosted tips. What happened, man? What happened to your hair? What happened?
Who knows?
Yeah.
But anyway, we decided. With the help of Mr. A, that we would just, like, soldier through it and watch the movie.
Yeah.
And so on Rotten Tomatoes, the reviews are, I think, like 33%.
Let me do an update.
I know it's 30. I think it's 34% for the audience liked. But critics, is it a 33%?
The Counselor is currently at
36%. 36?
That's, like, all critics. If you go to Top Critics, it's at a 22%.
Okay.
And the audience, which I think before had it at like a 60%.
On Friday, it was like a 60%. This
now
is 2 days later.
It has a 33% with 22,000.
So it's certified rotten.
It is certified rotten. Yeah. But I think the question is how rotten and if rotten at all. So I think we're going to have a good discussion
because
we're going to have a lot of people on the on the different spots of the spectrum. Jeremy, who is not with us, is on the bottom level of that spectrum. He gave it a 4 out of 10 for all of you guys listening. Yeah. Jeremy's review. I guess, Mr. A, since, you're the last bastion for wanting to see the movie.
Yeah.
Why don't you give everyone kind of like the lowdown of what goes on in the seedy underbelly of El Paso?
Yeah. All right.
And
so.
Juarez.
And various,
London,
various
and Boise.
Parts of Europe.
Yeah. And also Chicago randomly at the end with Hank from Breaking Bad.
Right.
Continue.
And John Leguizamo.
Yeah, and John. That's got to be him.
It's him, right?
Let me check that.
That was him. Yeah.
You give the
Sam checks it out.
Mr. A.
Give us the synopsis.
Well, basically, Michael Fassbender, who has no name in this movie other than Counselor.
That's true.
He is in with some bad dudes.
He's good friends
with Javier Bardem, who is this entrepreneur by day, drug kingpin by night.
Yes.
And he wants to get involved in the drug business just for this one thing. Apparently, he's in for some money somewhere. I think it had something to do with buying his fiance such an expensive diamond
ring. He had some money troubles, too, underlying financial problems.
But he's still rolling around in Bentleys and, like, decent suits and stuff.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yeah.
He's in some money trouble, wants to get involved in the drug business. And
exactly.
Basically, things start going really bad.
Yeah. And the blame pretty much falls on him and his cronies.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many Beat Takeshi films you've seen, Mr. A, but I feel like this was kind of like their take on it.
Yeah.
Because a lot of Beat Takeshi, I think 3 off the top of my head are like this, where they get in trouble and all their friends die.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Not to spoil the movie.
Yeah, not to spoil the movie.
Not everybody dies.
Not everyone dies, and you kind of have to guess who's going to and how they're going to die. Right?
It's fun.
But when the hammer falls down, the third act is the hammer falling down.
Yeah.
I don't know. We have a really awesome cast, I think.
Yeah,
it's a spectacular cast, actually.
Absolutely phenomenal
cast.
You
have Michael Fassbender as the counselor, Penelope Cruz as the counselor's wife or love interest, Cameron Diaz, who Javier Bardem, and Brad Pitt, Rosie Perez, if you're fans of Do the Right Thing.
Yeah, and the guy that played Hitler in Downfall was in it for about 5 minutes. He was a diamond dealer at the very beginning.
That was him.
John Leguizamo, and as you mentioned, the cat from Breaking Bad.
The dude who plays Hank from Breaking Bad. I can't remember.
Yeah,
his name.
I don't remember his name. But we had a great cast. Let's just talk about what we thought they did right. How about that?
Okay.
Because then we'll hit what they did wrong, which could be longer for some than others. But what they did right in general and favorite scene. Let's do it like that.
Okay.
Let's start with Mr. A, the most popular, the biggest fan of the movie.
Part of part of the reason I like this type of stuff is I really like Cormac McCarthy novels. So if you're not used to seeing things go bad, people getting tore up in a lot of interesting,
kind
of
awesome ways.
It was
really good.
While also at the same time, couching all this in a tale of morality and about wider universals about the nature of human existence and what motivates people. You're not going to like this, and especially if you're not familiar with Cormac McCarthy's writing style, which is very elaborate, and that's reflected in the dialogue, then you're not going to like this. But the things that I thought were really good, to me, the best part was the scene where he has the conversation on the telephone with the drug dealer.
With the Hispanic guy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, to me, the dialogue in that section about why things were the way they were for the counselor, because it was a reality of his own making.
Yes.
I thought that was an exceptionally poetic point
in
the movie.
This is going to be good. Yeah.
And
this is going to be good.
I really like that, because the whole conversation, the dichotomy between somebody who thinks he knows the way the world works, and as he's talking with perhaps somebody who really, well, not perhaps, but somebody who really knows the way the world works.
Or at least their own reality right now. Yeah.
That I thought that was an exceptionally poignant moment for me when I was watching it.
Cool.
Yeah. Cool.
What about you? Your favorite scene? Yeah.
Oh, favorite scene. Oh, Brad Pitt when he dies.
Did you really like that scene?
That was just cool looking.
That was a good scene. You knew it was going to happen in the first 5 minutes of the conference. Well, in his
it's
first
fun,
meeting with Javier Bardem.
I like to watch Brad Pitt die, just like in Burn After Reading when he gets his head blown
away.
It's just fun to watch.
That's a great scene too.
Yeah.
But this was so much more.
Well, this
planned out.
Yeah, this is serious too. Like in Burn After Reading, it's hilarious. You just want to watch it over and over and over again.
I was waiting for that kill. I didn't know who it was going to be. Is that your favorite scene? Because I'll just move on to my favorite scene.
Yeah, that's it.
My favorite scene is when Brad Pitt tells Fassbender to meet him up at the Coronado, the atrium, and they have that come to Jesus moment.
Yeah, that's a great scene too.
And it's like, and the coolest part about that is for a movie dialogue heavy, right? Very sparse on the soundtrack for the most part.
Yeah.
After when Brad Pitt is doing the talking and giving Michael Fassbender like a reality check. And Brad Pitt leaves and he says like, see you around or whatever, right? And you just like have the camera on Michael Fassbender with like tears coming down his face. Like for a scene where for a movie that has relied so much on dialogue, that's a really good shot.
It's also refreshing because you can go on forever talking about bullshit
something
that I don't care
about.
Yeah.
And he's going to be, and it's like you see the fear in his face and like he's weighing over his head.
Yeah.
And what's he going to do?
Yeah.
So I really like that scene.
More I could chew.
Yeah. And when I was watching that, I was like, oh, this movie's going to go up. Like right now, like I'm going to bring the rating up, right? And then it did for a little bit. And then towards the third act, I was like, oh, now it's going to go back down. So I'll talk about that when I'm going to give my score.
Yeah.
But that was one of my really favorite scenes in the movie. Brad Pitt did a good job in general, I thought. What about grand scheme of things? What did you like? This is going to be hard for Sam, I think. So Mr. A, why don't you go again?
Well, before we actually got to talking with Sam and I were talking a little bit about the movie, and I thought that like any Ridley Scott movie, it's got exceptional lens work.
Yeah, that's
true.
That's going to basically be my thing too. Like it's shot in a really kind of like atmospheric way that gets like it shows you kind of like the wide expanses of places like El Paso, because this is almost entirely shot in El Paso and Juarez.
Yeah.
And kind of like the claustrophobic nature of, like, you know, whenever they're indoors anywhere, like the during the last third, whenever Michael Fassbender's in his rinky dink hotel thingy in Mexico or wherever it is.
Mm-hmm.
Even that bar, like, feels really stuffy and closed in.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, there's a palpable sense of the environment, because when he's in the bar and he wakes up and he's talking with a bartender, you mean, you can see the sweat beads on Michael Fassbender's forehead and on the bartender's forehead. You could probably imagine that, how his shirt feels on his back. He hasn't
I was getting kind of grossed out just watching it.
He hasn't showered for days.
And it's cool because it's not like, there are really grimy parts, but then there are also, like, really cold, like, kind of clean parts, like the first time Brad Pitt goes into London. I don't know if that's Heathrow. I don't think it is, because it looks much nicer than Heathrow.
Well, it said Welcome to Heathrow International.
Is it Heathrow?
Yeah.
Okay, maybe it's just a terminal that's nice. Yeah. But, like, he goes to the hotel, and it's, like, really nice and clean. Mm-hmm. And then, like, kind of toward the earlier parts of the movie, whenever Michael Fassbender is talking to his wackadoo Javier Bardem buddy, and, like, they have just, like, really kind of, like, nice things.
Everyone's house is clean and pristine.
It's kind of random, though. Like, wherever Michael Fassbender lives in El Paso or is staying, they had, like, a MacBook. Or, sorry, they had a...
like a gigantic Mac.
Yeah, they had an iMac, but it was, like, a sixth-generation iMac. But then later on, whenever he calls... Michael Fassbender calls his wife, it's, like, a nice iMac, like a new... Or Mac, iMac, yeah. It's
I thought it was iMac. Actually... I thought she was at her house. And
okay, they're
house.
Just different places.
They're just... They
okay,
weren't living
that's
together
what I was
yet.
Thinking. I wasn't sure if they were living together or if it was just, like...
said, go home and I'll
and then at
later.
The same time, I'm like, well, your apartment costs, like, looks like it costs $2,000 a month. Why do you have an iMac from 7 years ago?
Yeah, well, he's spending on that nice French press.
Oh, yeah. It's a Bodum.
Yeah.
I like to make my tea this way. Squish.
Yeah. Yep. So those of you guys are going to go with the cinematography?
Well, lens work, and maybe Sam's going to disagree with me here, but I really like, I think the dialogue was exceptionally powerful in certain points.
I did not like the dialogue.
Now, I can see that as a criticism, because some people might think it's too long, but the dialogue serves to undergird the larger ideas that Cormac McCarthy's trying to say.
And they're pretty familiar themes with his other work, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
It's very Cormac McCarthy.
Yeah, the fallen nature of man,
nature
of violence, what motivates people.
Basically, greed and pussy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like John Leguizamo's little speech, because that basically is all of No Country for Old Men.
Yeah.
Like, not like content-wise, but like the moral of No Country for Old Men is basically like, hey, man, sometimes everybody gets killed.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of something that I really liked in general. Aside from the cinematography.
What about the Ferraris?
The car culture is great.
Californias for some reason.
I don't know. I did like the story and where it could have gone, as far as, like, this thing could have been absolutely fantastic. But I don't know, like...
I don't know. With that much dialogue, I don't know.
That's the whole point. With that much dialogue, you couldn't have been. I feel like you stifle it
you'd
with
have
that
to,
much.
You'd
but
have to take some of that.
Definitely the whole premise of the story has a lot of potential to me, I think.
Yeah,
and with
the
cast this
cool.
big, they didn't sign on. Not you don't get all of these people to sign on to something like this unless they have some faith in it.
Yeah.
But then maybe
also
it's...
You know what? Then again, the movie didn't really cost a whole lot. We didn't get into that earlier like we normally do, but because IMDb didn't have it. But on Wikipedia, it says that the budget was $25 million.
It's made 8 back.
And that I don't think that count is right, because it said it's made 8 back as of this weekend. Did it come out this weekend or last weekend?
This weekend.
Oh, okay. Then, yeah, it's just $8
million. It'll make its money back then.
It'll make its money back. Plus, I think this Sunday, the Sunday we'll actually know for sure when the official count is out.
Yeah.
Like, in a couple hours.
Yeah.
But, I thought that was such a big group of people. And maybe it's just, like, how that dialogue would be great in a book to read, but I don't know if you could translate it over quite so easily on the screen.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's one of the criticisms I've read of the movie is that, you know, the Coen brothers and their adaptation of No Country for Old Men were really able to strip down some of the language in the novel and make it more appropriate for a cinematic audience. Whereas this, Cormac McCarthy wrote the screenplay himself. I doubt that they changed the comma in the thing.
Yeah,
that's true.
I mean, if they did, it was kind of not effective.
But I can also kind of see where they were going, because maybe they were trying to go more with kind of the art film dialogue driven And hey, it's also set in the thriller the thriller genre, you know?
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
Maybe.
Let's talk about criticisms. Let's start with Sam, because I know he has a lot.
It's not really a lot. It's just like there are lots of things the movie did that I don't understand why they did it this way, or like why the dialogue is like this. Like the first scene when they're in bed, like normal people don't talk that way. That's not how people speak. And if they
that
do, they're really, really weird people then.
That was a weird, that was just a weird like, conversation.
It was just very odd because I couldn't believe the kind of romance or like, just romantic nature between Michael Fassbender and Penelope Cruz. It's just like they just met like yesterday. And then
you didn't think there was any chemistry between the two characters?
No, there was like zero chemistry between those two. There were more chemistry between Sandra Bullock and
George Clooney.
George Clooney in Gravity.
See that? He was off floating in space for half the movie.
Yeah, like, and Michael Fassbender, like, his character doesn't really, like, I can't really connect with him at all because he just seems like a dude and then, like, bad stuff is happening and he's like, why is bad stuff happening to me?
That's
like,
true.
There's nothing that's like, oh, yeah, you're interesting or you're saying something clever or, like,
yeah, I mean,
he just
the really,
seems like a boring guy.
But see, I kind of understand why the choice is made that way. I mean, I think of a lot of Kubrick films, for instance, where things just happen to the characters because they make a choice, and then the universe just comes down
absolutely
on them like
but
a
like,
pile
Michael
of bricks.
Fassbender doesn't do anything. Like he's not like, well, let me go like get my wife. Yeah. He's just like, let me call you and tell you that I'm going to see you later. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, well, let me like do something about these pricks who think that I've done wrong.
Yeah.
He's like, no, let me just do have like a fake. Like a moot court talk with my wackadoo friend Javier Bardem. Like that's all that happened. It wasn't like he didn't take any action, which is I think a part that's a part of the movie. Like he's supposed to be
feckless because he has no idea what's going on.
Yeah,
because
he's in over his head. But like he could at least do more. And it's like you're an attorney. You should know some people, not like bad guys, but like you
well,
should
I
know
mean,
how to get yourself out of this.
I mean,
contact the authorities.
To counter that, I mean, he went and talked to the. He went and tried to. He tried to get the drug pin. Whoever, the Mexican guy at the middle part of the movie to kind of lay off because he went to the guy, his friend, who was the cartel rep down in Mexico to see if he could place the phone call.
I like
call.
That guy. That guy was really nice.
Yes. A nice office, too.
Yeah.
Very nice office.
Maybe one day, right?
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like some of the dialogue was just kind of too heavy for what we were watching.
I think I said if these are supposed to be like bad guys and like seedy characters, they're also the most long-winded, eloquent seedy characters to ever exist.
That is true.
It's just Cameron Diaz at the end when she just goes on and on. It's like, dude, I don't care. I get it. You won.
I didn't like Cameron Diaz in the movie. I think she's going to be like my least favorite thing about the movie.
Well, I think you're supposed to be repulsed by her.
That is true. That is true. But
I mean,
like
she's
the way she's
not executing it well.
Yeah, like she could have been the blonde bitch in a different way.
Yeah,
but
kind of like what's her face in God
Only
God Forgives.
Yeah, we were talking about that in the car earlier.
Yeah.
Only God Forgives, and it's probably I don't know. That lady was different too, but I think that character would have been even better.
I think so
movie.
Too,
yeah.
Just because she spoke way less.
Yeah, yeah.
She
yeah.
just like you know
well,
hung
the Cameron
out and
Diaz
then she
stuff
got her-
was a little different just because. I don't know. There's some editing things in
hey,
here that I thought that were kind of weird. When she talks to Javier Bardem right before he meets his maker, she's going on and on about like, do you want me to stay? How's this going to work out? And then they kind of hit a lull, and then it just jumps to, but are you hungry? And then she's like, I'm famished. And I understand why they put the I'm famished thing in there, but it feels like there was like another minute or two of dialogue that they just cut out to get into this.
Yeah.
I would like to see a director's cut of this movie.
It seemed kind of random.
Again, because I feel like they edited a lot of this shit out, especially to accommodate the third act flow.
Yeah.
But I think Cameron Diaz was the worst one out of all of them. I think more of her lines than anything
else.
Yeah,
it's not really like her acting entirely. It's just, yeah, she didn't get the best lines because she's supposed to be like the...
She's supposed to be the crude, blonde, ice bitch, right?
Exactly. Yeah. But what do you think was a problem, Mr. A?
Well, to me, I like the heavy dialogue because I like Cormac McCarthy novels,
right,
and I like to see his language translated on the screen because I don't think a lot of people who know who Cormac McCarthy is, and if they hear his language, maybe some of the more intellectually curious people might be intrigued to go pick up Blood Meridian, which is just like this, or, you know, No Country for Old Men or The Road or something like that. But I don't think the dialogue is a problem for me. Where I did find a problem, if I were just a normal viewer, mm-hmm. you know, just not a Cormac McCarthy fan or anything like right. else, I think a lot of people, the way the movie was advertised, maybe they were expecting something like No Country for Old Men or something like a conventional genre thriller, mm-hmm. which would move very fast.
Yeah.
And which would be, you know, you'd kind of go through the motions with Michael Fassbender, the counselor. But really, yeah. it's more of a interplay between him and all of these other terrible people in a terrible situation. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe the way it was marketed was wrong. I think that for most people, that sounds pretentious. God damn it. Most people. I think for the regular American moviegoer,
yeah.
they probably won't like the pace.
Okay.
The pace was fine for me. I'm kind of used to that, mm-hmm. but I can see why the pace would be a flaw. I can see why the Baroque dialogue would be a flaw. I mean, that's the most eloquent son of a bitching drug dealer I've ever met or seen on a movie,
true.
Right?
Made it pretty hard to believe.
But, it made it pretty hard for him to understand.
But I think there are so many I think there are so many other qualities about the movie which in my eyes justify it against giving it such a low rating on like, you know, on Rotten Tomatoes or something like
What's
that.
What's IMDb have it at?
IMDb
Metacritic has it at a 49.
IMDb has it at a 6.2.
6.2 is higher
with just over 1800 users.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. I mean, I actually kind of like your critique, Mr. A, in the sense that it's more like are you trying to say that the reason, like, one of the things that you don't like about it is that it was a wide release? Would this have been better as a limited release and then marketed that way? It would be more beneficial because then you'll know what you'll get.
I think so. If it were done more
house kind of thing.
Yeah, because here you got a major studio, 20th Century Fox.
Yes.
You got A-list director Ridley Scott, and you got all these great characters, and it was marketed for a wide audience. I don't think it lends itself to that. It's more something like The Road, you know, or maybe Killer Joe.
Well, The Road was wide released, though.
I know, but
Road wasn't as wide released as a thing.
But even that, even with the release that The Road had, the people who are not hardcore Cormac McCarthy readers are not going to go see it.
Yeah.
The only thing that would be a potential draw would be seeing Viggo Mortensen.
Yeah.
And Robert Duvall. Here, I mean, I think they tried a similar strategy with Fassbender Cruz and all the others.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
But again, the material I think is so dense, and considering the subject matter, I mean, a lot of people I think would be repulsed by it because it is there's no redeemable or likable character in the movie.
No redemption.
Hey, I like the cheetahs.
Oh, yeah.
The cheetahs. They were
no human character.
Yeah, you really can't, care for these people. I mean, the only person you could probably care for is Penelope Cruz because she seems like the innocent.
She's the victim
in
all of this.
Yeah.
She seems to me, I mean, watching the movie, she seems just as bad as everybody else.
How?
Yeah, how?
I think that, just watching it at the very beginning of the movie, uh-huh. it seems like she's just as materialistic as everybody else is. Maybe to a lesser extent.
To a lesser extent, I think, maybe she also doesn't know his kind of like business.
Yeah, she just knows he's a lawyer. An attorney.
Yeah. But I mean, that's the only thing, and I guess that's the tragedy in it, but even at that point, you don't care. It's just kind of like, I don't know, it's hard to, you want her to pull through, I guess. But I don't know how. I don't know. The third act was actually, the worst part for me, I think, in general, was the first act. I thought it started off too slow.
Yeah, dude.
The background and stuff, like, I thought if they could, you know, and the thing about McCarthy's dialogue is that when you're listening to it, it's all fine, right? But, like, the way they're setting things up is all implication, which is fine by me because it's not hard to get.
Yeah.
It's roundabout implication setting up everything for the second and third act.
And to me, I think, to me that worked. I mean, and I can see why people would disagree, but it seems like all the chess pieces are moving into place and subconsciously you're thinking, oh shit, there's going to be some really bad things.
And when it goes down, it goes down hard. Yeah.
Yeah. To me, I think that's masterful. I mean, it's kind of like, to me, it reminds me of The Shining in which, you know that Jack Torrance is going to go nuts.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's going to be some murder. There's going to be some blood.
Yeah, but in that
and it's
movie,
all telegraphed to you very at
true.
The very beginning.
Yeah, but in that movie, like, all the characters do stuff. Like, Jack goes crazy. Michael Fassbender just cries a lot and acts like a bitch whenever he gets a CD at some point.
He is helpless.
Dude, I get that you're helpless, but, like, you could be handling this.
Well, see, to me, I think he does do something. I think a lot of, to me, you would at least I, what I was doing, I was kind of trying to put myself in his shoes. And, you know, he thinks he's this suave, arrogant guy.
Yeah.
Or he's the suave, knowledgeable guy. He thinks he knows how the way the world works. And then he gets his comeuppance.
And then I kind of.
But he just like takes it. I wouldn't take it. I think it was the whole thing.
The whole thing about a Cormac McCarthy thing is like he exhausted most of his options. I think he tried every avenue. He winds up where he is, and it's almost like the futility of a situation is going to be overbearing for the rest of his life. That's how I came out with it.
He's made kind of he's the character where the morality play comes through.
It really does. Yes.
So there's more of a conduit through the.
Frown upside down. Go like,
because you know, I mean, he's very limited with the options, except for going and like even when he's talking to the drug kingpin, like even then he's like, "Would you like to trade places?" He's like, "Yes, please." And then he's like, "Well, that's impossible." So that's when you know, like, he's everything he's done. He's gone to all of his friends. When Brad Pitt said he actually don't have any friends, which is a good line too.
That was a great line.
Yeah. Brad Pitt is the only shining star.
He was great. I think he's like let's talk. Okay, so I think Brad Pitt was great. You think Brad Pitt
did a great job? Was great.
Which one out of the main cast do you think was the best one?
Out of the five that are on the,
I really liked Javier Bardem. Every time he was on screen, and
he
Brad
wasn't
Pitt
as bad
too.
As I thought he would be.
Javier Bardem. Every time he's on screen, I always, because he was just such an outrageous character.
He's so silly. Yeah, it's awesome.
I just paid attention to him, and I think.
Oh yeah.
You know, and I'm trying to understand where this guy's coming from. I mean, he's trying to do right by his friend, I guess, by getting set up in here. But, you know, at the same time, he's cautioning him against what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And I think just by the weight of his conversations, you know, keeps talking about how scared he is of Malenka. And then.
Oh, yeah. Malenka is Cameron Diaz.
Yeah. And who's, I guess, the love interest of Javier Bardem's character.
Yeah.
I don't think they were married in the movie. I think they were just having...
No, they were just, like, dating or something.
Having
like
a relationship. Mm-hmm. But I think in his body language, you can sense that he knows what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But he does it anyway.
It's possible. Yeah, I think it was, like, I think that's what they were, like, hinting at in one of those scenes with him and Michael Fassbender. I think Javier Bardem would get my silver medal because I thought he was good. I thought he'd be more goofy in this one, but he actually did a good job. What are we going to do? Let's talk point systems. Let's do it. On a scale of 1 to 10, we'll give Mr. A the last word every time. I mean, I feel like it's going to go one round of what we think and then a back and forth of why.
Oh, okay.
So who wants to go first between you and me?
I'll go first.
Okay, let's do it.
I'll give this movie a 3.5.
Jeremy gave it a 4.
Just a little bit more than what Jeremy gave it. Because, yeah, this movie just, I mean, it was... there was like a lot of potential. I agree, because I think both of you said like the film. I mean, the actors are great. Ridley Scott, you know, has kind of fallen off as of late, but he's done some like remarkable work.
Yes,
like
I mean that's kind of his trend, though. He'll make shit, and then he'll come back and he'll just make something really great.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I mean, I thought Prometheus wasn't bad.
I didn't see Prometheus.
I didn't think Robin Hood was all that bad either. It wasn't great, but I don't think it
either.
Deserved all the ire that it did.
Right.
Yeah, I haven't seen Prometheus either. I've seen parts of it because I have it, and I just skipped around because I didn't really want to watch it for whatever reason, and I thought it was okay. It's fine, whatever. But yeah, it was just like you had a lot of potential, and then you kind of like pissed it away in a ton of like really convoluted, unnecessary dialogue. I know the Coen brothers probably pared down No Country for Old Men a ton just because like there's very little actual speech. And this movie suffers from that thing I guess a lot of contemporary movies have where it's like they have to tell you instead of just showing you stuff.
Do you think, though, Sam, that if, you know, Cormac McCarthy obviously wrote it, and as I said before, I don't think they changed a whole lot. Do you think if maybe
they
brought in a consultant maybe to do a polish?
Yeah, I think that would have been better. I mean, they just need to truncate a lot of the...
It's a lot more saying rather than doing.
Yeah, I mean, like, at the end, like, legit, Cameron Diaz has, like, a 6 or 7 minute long diatribe to her banker, and in my head, I'm like, why am I in this part of the movie? What does this have anything to do with what happened before or after? She could have just shown Cameron Diaz smiling, and I would have been like, great job, she won, like, that's it. You know, I don't give a shit about what she has to tell her banker or be weirdly threatening to her banker because nothing, there's no more movie after that.
I will say what Andy talked about in the scene where they met at the hotel. Brad Pitt and Michael Fassbender met at the hotel. Mm-hmm. That's a really great scene just because that's one of the few scenes where there's not a whole lot of talking. It's just like Brad Pitt being like, shit's going to get real, real, man. And Michael's like, really? Does it have to? And then Brad's like, yeah, drink your OJ.
Well, that whole scene is like, the dialogue is very terse.
Yeah.
Brad Pitt is a good juxtaposition of when Brad Pitt is kind of like laughing like they think we did it. It's kind of funny.
Yeah.
And then it gets real when he's like, when they go up to the bar.
Yeah, yeah.
And I liked that whole like, flip the switch, like, this is really fucking serious.
Yeah, yeah. That was really good because that showed a lot of restraint. In this movie, I feel like Ridley Scott didn't show restraint with respect to how they used the dialogue.
Well,
goes on and on and on.
Like, the first dialogue bit when they're playing around the sheets and he's talking to Penelope Cruz.
Which is so uncomfortable. That's worse than fucking Watchmen. That was much worse than Watchmen.
Yeah, well, I just, like, why would you talk to your girlfriend that way?
Because she's a robot and I'm a robot,
too. It's already, like, you know, it's like, where did she learn to do that? Stuff like that? It's just kind of like, I'm pretty sure he's done that to you before.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's a little weird.
It's very corny.
Also, I think Penelope Cruz, this is her second Cormac McCarthy movie, right? Was she not in All the Pretty Horses? Or
I think she was in All the Pretty Horses.
That's Matt Damon.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry.
So that's like her second Cormac McCarthy role.
I think she was in All
the Pretty Horses. Yeah, she was in All the Pretty Horses.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, I guess I'll do mine.
Yeah.
Which you gave it a
3.5.
3.5. Jeremy
lower than
a 4.
Only God forgives.
I am going to give this a 6.5.
Okay.
I'm going to give it a 6.5.
Okay.
Because everyone, I think there's a lot of star power behind it. The second half was stronger than the first half, I thought, as far as like things happening.
Yeah.
Right? The action actually picks up.
Yeah, he didn't do a great job at introducing the characters.
No, and I think a lot of it was a slow goings, right? And then it's like, you know what's going to happen, and then when it does, it's like, okay, now you're just going to have to deal with it. It's my problem with the movie is that it's inconsistent as a whole.
Yeah.
As in like, oh, there'd be one really good scene, and then a scene that's like, oh, it's okay, and then another scene was just like, why'd you have that in there?
And the dialogue is painful.
So I think sometimes the dialogue is very painful, right? But I think 6.5 does it justice because there was enough that did right to keep it going for me. But I was about to fall asleep in the first act.
Yeah, there were times where like I wasn't falling asleep. I was just like, did they just really say those words? Mm-hmm. Those words came out of someone's mouth.
But there's enough interaction between like, okay, so Michael Fassbender and Penelope Cruz, those conversations I could skip. Brad Pitt talking to anybody I would listen to.
Yeah. Just remove all of those scenes where they talk to each other. Have Michael Fassbender not have a wife. It's just her sister. And he's like, oh, no, my sister died.
Oh, sure, sure, sure. Yeah, yeah. But that's a 6.5 for me. And what would you give it, Mr. A?
I think I'm going to give it a 7.5.
Oh, 7.5.
Okay.
And
that's respectable.
And, you know, I acknowledge that the movie has its flaws. It's not to everybody's tastes. Mm-hmm. It might be too slow. But to me, I don't mind the pacing as much.
Right.
To me, it all works because it's setting up something that's going to be extremely terrible in the following acts.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, yeah, maybe the whole bed sequence was cringeworthy. I don't think people talk that way, but, you know, you don't have drug pins. You don't have drug pins either who are quoting Mexican
poets. Yeah, it's not supposed to be
poets.
Yeah.
But, I mean, all of the dialogue, to me, I can look past that because I understand why it's written. And to me, I mean, and I said this at the very beginning of our conversation. I like Cormac McCarthy.
Yeah.
I like to see his dialogue on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
Does it translate that well? Well, I mean, obviously, based upon our discussion here, some of us think it does. Some of us, it doesn't.
Doesn't.
Right.
And maybe that's a lesson to people who decide to do, you know, future adaptations. But I like hearing that. And to me, the scenes where it's like, yeah, this is the way it's going to be. This is the reality of your own making. I thought those really hit home. And, you know, I do like bleak, cynical, dark explorations of people's motivations. And I think that that's there. And when you see Michael Fassbender get his comeuppance, you know, it's something that you hate to see. But at the same time, he set himself up for that reality.
That is true.
That coupled with the cinematography and I think the very judicious use of music in the movie, there wasn't a whole lot of it.
No, there's not a lot of it. When it's used, one or two times when it's used, it seems kind of like, okay, man, something terrible is going to happen to Brad Pitt. But like other parts, it just sounds like, oh, yeah, that's kind of good.
Yeah. There's a sparse soundtrack. But the dialogue, I think the problem that I had with the first act was that I didn't have a problem, aside from the bed scene, I didn't have a problem with like the dialogue itself. but it felt like there was nothing. It's like, okay, we're watching these people talk. What's happening? What's going to happen? Their dialogue wasn't telling us anything except for, like, are you ready for the deal? And he's like, yes, I'm ready for the deal. And they're like, are you sure? That could be like the that can be the two conversations Fassbender had with Javier Bardem and then Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's still interesting to listen to, right? But when you're listening to it,
and I mean, Brad Pitt tells him, he's like, they're going to kill us. They're going to kill us.
But I think that was the only issue that I had with the first act was like the very first couple conversations, which take up a lot of screen time, felt like it wasn't going anywhere. And then when you get it later, you get more dialogue that has.
And see, I think it just sets up everything. It's like, well, now you're in anticipation of seeing this happen. And when it does happen, it's extremely unsettling.
Right, right.
Yeah, not that unsettling.
I think
people just get shot in the head and then like
the visceral violence. I don't think it was that. Did you think it was super duper violent?
No, I think the things that happen off screen are probably the most unsettling things. I think one of the part, and you know, Sammy made light of this when he walked out of the movie. But to me, what bothered me is when Michael Fassbender is in his shitty hotel room.
Yeah, and he gets that CD
and he gets the snuff film of his wife.
Yeah. It could be a Bananas in Pajamas DVD. You don't know.
Well, no, but see, everything. He knew, I think he knew what it was, and you know, Brad Pitt asked him at the hotel.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Do you know what a snuff film is? And that makes you complicit in murder. And then when it juxtaposes over to, you know, the torso being thrown into the dump, that was a little unsettling.
That was the worst. I mean, that was unsettling. I actually was anticipating from reading the reviews about like the violence. Like after the kills were going on, I was like, okay, that can't be the violence they're talking about because it has to be when they kidnap Penelope Cruz. I'm like, there's going to be some terrible torture.
Yeah, I thought they were
going to
just show the bolo thing on her.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
but I mean, I thought something because after the bolo thing happened, obvious. I was like, all right, something terrible. There's going to be a gruesome scene that I don't want to watch with Penelope Cruz. But no.
It happens to Brad Pitt instead.
Happened to Brad Pitt instead.
Yeah, she just falls into a
dump. I thought it'd be something where it was going to be like there would be like an uncomfortable torture slash like sexual assault scene. And then on the video
like
or something
Berserk.
Like that. Yeah. I thought it was something unsettling like that.
Well, I mean, at the same time, I think anything that it's left to the powers of your own imagination is far worse.
And that is true. I think that's why they did it with like the dump. And plus, she has too much star power to be like, I'm not going to get raped on camera.
Yeah.
But
so on average, it's a 3.5 with a 6.5, with a 7.5,
and a 4 on Jeremy's part.
Yeah, so it comes out to like a 5.5, 6,
or maybe a 4.
So we got 7 on your side, 7 points on Sam's side, and then we have what does that make it?
7. What do you mean?
You're 4 and you're 3.
Yeah,
you're 3.5. So you're 7.5. You're 7.5, and then my 6.5. So I think it's going to be almost...
It might be right in the middle at a 6 where most of the...
Wait, so you gave it a 6.5?
6.5.
Andy gave it a 6.5, yeah.
And then you gave it a 7.5, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We're doing the math. We're bringing you the facts. And then we're dividing it by 4. 7.25.
That's not right.
Maybe I didn't do it right.
You didn't do Jeremy's.
No, I did. Oh, no, I know what I did. No. When I did Jeremy's, I added his twice.
Oh, gotcha.
So 7.5 from myself, 3.5 from Sam, 6.5 from Andy, and a 4. Was it a 4 from Jeremy?
Yeah, 5.375.
Okay, 5.375. So that puts us
right
in
the
middle of the road.
Yeah.
Dean, what do you think?
I you know what? I think that's to be expected because not a lot of people are going to like the material. They're not going to like the way that the approach was taken. But, you know, reasonable minds can disagree.
That is definitely true. I know, you know, like with the Cormac McCarthy stuff, like even when No Country for Old Men came out, it wasn't a big deal. And I think this is
a big deal for me.
It's like a big, I think it's like this is the widest release of a Cormac McCarthy since like
No Country for Old Men.
I was gonna say All the Pretty Horses, as far as like a wide release, because No Country for Old Men was a slow creeper.
Really?
Yeah, it was limited, and then boom.
Oh, I thought it was just a wide release. I don't remember.
No, but it's one of those things. Where I thought it was better than average. Right? Star power was good enough to keep me entertained. You thought it was just
well
bad.
Below average.
Well below average. And Mr. A gives it a 7.5. So it's a good smattering of opinions here.
Yeah.
Would you recommend watching it, renting it, or just skipping?
Me?
Yeah.
I would just tell you to skip it.
I would say rent it, and
I always like the big screen experience, so okay. Go it's take a look nice, at yeah. the theater.
That's true. Very nice, very nice. Cool. Well, right. Thank you, Mr. A.
Thanks.
We're yeah, still man. Waiting on that Blu-ray release of yours. But
Sorcerer.
Hey, Sorcerer. Yeah. We're looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, should man. Be good. Should be in April. Yeah.
Okay. All well, right. Stay tuned for that.
Yeah. And thanks, everybody, for listening. Appreciate it. Bye.
Bye.